It is Wednesday, July 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, emergency meetings are underway as Turkey deals with a recent coup attempt.
Basically, the idea is to create a lot of fear and eliminate all potential opposition.
We look at the role the children of Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump are playing in his campaign. And young filmmakers show the battle against drug addiction. It's all ahead. Turkey's crackdown following last week's attempted coup continues to widen with a ban on academics traveling abroad. Tuesday, the government suspended thousands of state education workers. Tens of thousands of other civil servants, including security force members and judges, have been detained, questioned, or fired in the wake of Friday's failed coup by the military. The government said exiled Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen orchestrated the effort to topple President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and wants him extradited from the United States. Gulen has denied any involvement in the coup. Ankara has filed documents, it says, demand Gulen's return to Turkey. Middle East Institute scholar Zubair Iqbal tells VOA's Victor Beatty he believes the government's reaction so far constitutes an overreaction to events.
It's quite clearly an issue of arresting a lot of people and then go through the process of prosecuting them and then leaving some of them out and then picking some and sentencing them. Basically, the idea is to create a lot of fear and eliminate all potential opposition, overt or covert.
The United States is promising to assist Turkey in its effort to find those who were responsible.
I think the idea here is that the United States would very much like to see Turkey not going overboard. It's a pendulum, and it's going to go to the extreme before it comes down to the middle. And any steps that one can take in order to keep them from, quote unquote, going too far will be helpful for everybody, including for the United States. And I think this kind of an offer is a good offer. One is not clear, though, as to what will it do, especially in the context that Turkey's already made a formal request for Mr. Gulen to be sent back to Turkey to face charges.
Will he face justice back in Turkey?
I think what has to happen is to go through a process whereby the Turks can be assured that their government is not under threat and that this kind of a step was misconstrued. Whosoever has done it has to pay a price for it. But at the same time, tell them that, look, we guarantee that we are with you and nothing of the kind will happen again. In the process, bring them back from the brink.
Are you concerned at all about Turkey's democratic tradition?
Not really. Let me tell you why I'm saying that. Having known Turkey and having worked on Turkey for a long time, it's a very, very vibrant place. Even the secularists or the Islamists who may fight with each other, may be willing to kill each other off, they will not go the route of a military dictatorship. That's out. I mean, that is not going to happen. And one of the reasons why this one didn't succeed was essentially because both sides have come to the conclusion that that doesn't work.
That's Middle East Institute scholar Zubair Iqbal. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky with a look at what's trending. So, Andrew, there's a lot going on.
There is a lot going on. We'll try to get to all of it. We'll start with hashtag pray for Syria. Now, this has been trending after a U.S. airstrike allegedly killed at least 85 civilians that were mistaken for ISIS fighters. So there's a lot of strong reaction about this on social media. And the one thing that I keep seeing again and again is people questioning why the media isn't covering this. They said they're very upset that there isn't more attention being paid to this. So they're trying to do their part on social media to draw attention to that. We also have a big anniversary today here in the U.S. 47 years ago, man set foot on the moon. So we have hashtag Apollo 11. Of course, that was the mission that went to the moon. And we have another small step for man, giant leap for maybe social media kind. Buzz Aldrin, who was on that mission, is doing his first ever live tweet, and he's answering questions about that moon mission. So he's taking his experience to social media and trying to reach out to as many people as possible.
That's great for him.
Absolutely. And he's posting some nice video clips, too, of the mission. As somebody pointed out, they went to the moon with less technology than we have on our smartphones today. So Imagine that. And then, of course, the Republican National Convention, still a trending topic. Still fallout over Melania Trump's speech, where she seems lifted some passages from Michelle Obama's 2008 convention acceptance speech. We have the speechwriter now coming out saying, well, I tried to resign and they wouldn't let me, and I accidentally put some passages in. People saying it's a cop-out, others saying, well, let's just move on and focus on other things. And then we have Caitlyn Jenner is trending. Of course, Caitlyn Jenner, formerly known as Bruce Jenner, the American Olympian, who said it was easier to come out as transgendered than as Republican. So you have people on both sides saying, well, it brings some much-needed diversity to the Republican Party. Others saying she's just looking for attention.
Thanks very much, Andrew. That was very impressive. Social media editor.
I can take a breath now.
Andrew Belshevsky. Here are some of the top stories trending. A prominent journalist in Ukraine is killed in a car bombing. The U.S. moves to seize assets bought with money stolen from Malaysian state funds. Britain's new prime minister meets the leaders of Germany and France. And a rights group says Kenya disappearances are linked to counterterrorism operations. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Radiation is among the many health dangers that face humans in outer space. Radiation exposure to crew members aboard the International Space Station is currently monitored with a number of instruments. Individual radiation doses are also measured with a device worn by each ISS crew member. But these devices can be read and processed only after the astronaut returns to Earth. A more sophisticated personal monitoring instrument developed for the European Space Agency has been included in the recent shipment to the ISS. Called the European Crew Personal Active Dosimeter, this new device will provide crew members with a real-time picture of their radiation exposure. The new system, which can distinguish radiation from the sun, the Van Allen belts, or from the far reaches of the galaxy, will also help scientists prepare for deep space travel. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, a counter-Islamic State coalition assembles near Washington. On Tuesday night, Republicans meeting at their national convention in Cleveland, Ohio, formally nominated Donald Trump to be the presidential nominee for the party. I'm joined now by International Edition's Doug Bernard, who is covering the convention in Cleveland. Well, Doug, looking ahead, there are going to be more speeches tonight. And a couple of the speakers are two of Donald Trump's children, his daughter Ivanka and his son Eric. But last night, two others of Donald Trump's children, his daughter Tiffany and his son Donald Trump Jr., also spoke. Now, in the past, we've seen presidential candidates, their children, adult children, will campaign for them, that kind of thing. But it seems like, at least to me, that Trump's children are being given sort of very major roles in this whole campaign.
Oh, they are. They're not only being given very public roles in terms of their speaking at this convention. Of course, by the time the convention's over, there are six Trumps, and we're going to have heard from five of them. The only one not speaking will be Barron, who is a youngster. I think he's 9 or 10 years old. But I think it's reflective not only of sort of the public role that Trump wants to put his family in, but the very kind of core of this campaign. Remember, the Trump children and Mr. Trump and Melania, they all worked very, very closely together in the Trump organization. That's just how they've worked. And so when it seems very clear that when they're approaching this campaign, they haven't really melded yet with, say, the traditional structures like the RNC, you know, like a candidate, say, John McCain or Mitt Romney, you know, they're made the nominee. They really sort of fold into the larger embrace of the RNC. And I think what you're seeing here, not only in the prominent role that they're having, but maybe some of the missteps that we're having too, is still a reluctance. The Trump group wants to keep control really tight to themselves, and that's causing some friction.
Yes, because they have certainly have been a successful team as far as business. I mean, I know Mr. Trump has had some controversies and bankruptcies in his working life over the years, mm-hmm. but, you know, they have largely been a successful company. However, there are a number of professional political people that are seasoned pros at all this.
Exactly. You know, if you think that running a campaign is complicated, try being president. Try running the country. I think it's sort of the difference between maybe staging a wedding and then actually being married for 30 years. One's just a whole lot more work. And what I think seasoned political pros are looking at with some concern is that while Mr. Trump, his, you know, shoot-from-the-cuff style, worked during the primaries, it certainly garnered him lots of attention. He's brilliant at getting what they call free media. That, you know, a general presidential election is very different. And what he needs to be doing, which they don't really seem to be doing yet, is unifying everybody, unifying the party around him, around the platform, around the campaign. But so far, you know, it all just seems to be just about Donald Trump.
Well, another person it seems to be about, though, is the presumed Democratic nominee, Hillary Clinton. She was attacked quite a bit last night, particularly by New Jersey Governor Chris Christie.
Well, that's exactly so. And in fact, I'm just working on a piece right now. You know, the Republicans seem to be unifying, but unifying around what? And they seem to be unifying, frankly, less around Donald Trump as the candidate and much more about Hillary Clinton as the presumptive Democratic nominee. That really seems to be, you know, the rallying cry that you're hearing. That's the lines that get people on their feet, that get the convention floor, you know, really rocking. It's really about, we're not Hillary, you know, anybody but Hillary kind of thing. Well, that's not exactly the biggest endorsement for your own candidate. And, you know, it's going to remain to be seen. Generally speaking, those kind of campaigns that say, we're not X, but we don't know what we really are, they often don't pan out in the end. So we'll see where this goes.
All right. Thanks very much, Doug. That's International Edition's Doug Bernard reporting from Cleveland. Thank you so much, Doug.
Thank you.
Well, defense ministers from more than 30 countries are joining Defense Secretary Ash Carter outside Washington to plan the next steps in the war against the Islamic State. I'm joined now by VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. Carla, what is the thinking behind this latest effort to coordinate strategy against IS?
Well, the biggest things coming out of this meeting is that Secretary of Defense Ash Carter wants to go by the contributions line by line, country by country, and lay out the next steps of the campaign and say, okay, this is what we need, and this is what we have, so we have to get to more.
Now this is the first of two meetings. I guess the second one is taking place tomorrow at the State Department, so I'm assuming that the meeting today is focusing on the military situation.
Right, so today Secretary Carter wants to lay out, he's been talking about this for weeks now, these steps, these 10 initial steps that the coalition wanted the Iraqis and the Syrian rebels to get to before they could feel like they could move forward toward Mosul and toward Raqqa. Right now, the last of those steps was the seizure of this Kiara West air base about 45 or so kilometers south of Mosul. Now that they've got this air base, the United States is sending about 560 troops to help set this up as a hub for the attack on Mosul. Meanwhile, in Syria, you just heard Manbij, a key headquarters in Manbij, was just taken from the Islamic State. They're still working to root out Islamic State from there so they can move forward toward Raqqa. While all of this is going on, now they need to have an additional 10 or 15, they haven't numbered them, or so steps to get to the Iraqis where they can be successful, because they don't want the Iraqis and the Syrians to go into these fights without everything that they need. So that's what this meeting is focusing on at Joint Base Andrews. The Secretary of State, John Kerry, is also speaking with some foreign leaders trying to get about $2 billion ready for the Iraqis, particularly, so so that once Mosul is defeated and the Islamic State is thrown out of Mosul and the Iraqis come in, there will be the humanitarian aid needed to help bring people back into their homes. There have been hundreds of thousands of Iraqis that have been displaced in this fight, and Brett McGurk, who's a special envoy for the counter-ISIL fight, has been saying that there are about 700,000 Iraqis that have been able to go back to their homes, but there's so many more that need to do this. And in order for this to happen, there has to be the humanitarian aid there, and there has to be the political stability for the Iraqi side.
All right. Thanks very much. My thanks to VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. This is VOA.
Political conventions are a critical part of the American electoral process. Our job is to put the conventions, the candidates, and the issues into context for our listeners. Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the Republican and Democratic Party's conventions starting July 18th on VOA.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
This is International Edition. When Frederick County Council member Billy Shreve watched films made by students at a Maryland Film Festival last year, he was surprised at the talent and creativity of the young filmmakers. The event inspired him to harness that creativity to fight drug use through a film program called Classmates for Life. The contest is open to students of all levels, elementary, middle, and high schools. Faiza El-Masri tells us more about the contest, and its first three winners, Faith Lapidus, narrates.
We all have an assemblage of lights, our friends, our family. Each person represents a light. Each of us are our own power source, keeping those lights on.
Lights Out is the first place winner on the high school level of the contest. The film was made by Alex Ismael, a rising 10th grader at Linganore High School. In the film, he used light bulbs as a metaphor.
Our friends and family around us each represent a different light, and we need to keep those lights on, and just the brighter the better. Doing drugs really is going to stop you from being there for those people.
Linganore High School principal Dave Keene says the school staff were excited that one of their students won first prize.
We were also very excited to hear about the program in general, because we know that students can use their peer pressure for positive things.
Efforts to include kids in any discussion about solutions to the drug problem is greatly needed and appreciated.
Sometimes young people attempting to escape their lives, they turn to chemicals and unnatural items to try to make them feel better, but they realize very quickly that feeling of betterness is temporary. Unfortunately, for some of our students, addiction sets in rather quickly, and we need to do all we can to not have students even tread into the waters of drug use.
Frederick County Council member Bill Shreve, who came up with the idea for the contest, says 95 students submitted films.
We kept it simple. How have drugs wrecked your world for middle school and high school students? And why are drugs bad for elementary school students? Over 50,000 people have viewed the videos on our YouTube channel, Classmates for Life. The parents love it because they can sit down at home, watch a few videos with their kids, talk about what the video content was.
On the middle school level, Alexandra Kish's video got first place.
I wanted to make it straightforward, don't do drugs. And I cut out the drugs and I like colored them and stuff. And I kind of did the more well-known drugs like cigarettes, and then I drew needles with like skull on it. And I explained to them like how much money people spend a year on these drugs.
Alexandra says drugs rob people's money and their well-being too.
I know someone who was very severely affected by drugs. I mean, this person just does not look well. She's not well mentally, physically. She just is out of it. And If someone does drugs, that affects other people. This person kind of affected me, although I don't see this person much, but my position could be anyone else's position, and I just don't want that to happen.
The first place winner in the elementary school category comes from Centerville Elementary School, a film titled Drugs Can Make Your Life Explode by fourth grader Liam Timpain.
A drug is anything that you take that can make you feel good for a while but can end up hurting you. This is a drug. You can get addicted to it and it gives you cancer. This is also a drug. And if you're
Liam says he made the film to have a positive impact on his peers. And for another important reason.
My dad is also a movie maker, and I wanted him to feel good about me. And I decided to make my own video. My dad was a really big help by, like, showing me the stuff he knows. Like, he'd show me how to do something while I'm editing it so I could do it myself.
Not only did he learn how to make films, he was also pleased with the feedback he received.
I've been congratulated, and my whole class clapped for me. On our health lessons, we're talking about how bad drugs are for you. And actually, one of the kids in my class mentioned, for that part of the health lesson, he said, it's kind of like what Liam's video is talking about.
Starting next year, and because of its huge success, the Classmates for Life Anti-Drug Student Film Contest will be a statewide program, giving more students an opportunity to creatively fight drug abuse. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
And that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In recent months, Bahrain has been cracking down on dissent, activists, journalists, and political opposition, primarily targeting members of the Shia community, and arguing that criticism of the government promotes sectarianism and threatens national unity and security. Recently, the police rearrested human rights activist and outspoken government critic Nabil Rajab on accusations of spreading false news. Furthermore, travel bans have been placed on civil society actors and journalists, including reporter Naziha Saeed, in addition to activists planning to attend this month's UN Human Rights Council in Geneva. The government also announced that it revoked prominent Shia cleric Sheikh Isa Qasim's citizenship without giving him the opportunity to appeal that revocation in court. In June, authorities suspended the activities of the main opposition political society, Al-Wefaq, National Islamic Society, and froze its funds. Then, on July 17th, Bahrain's High Civil Court ordered Al-Wefaq to be dissolved on accusations of undermining the state, spreading sectarianism, having connections to terrorist activities, and building a new generation that carries the spirit of hatred. The party's assets are to be liquidated and all proceeds transferred to the National Treasury. The July 17th court decision is subject to appeal. The United States is deeply concerned by the decision of a Bahraini court to dissolve the Al-Wefaq political society and liquidate its assets, said Secretary of State John Kerry in a written statement. The government's recent steps to suppress nonviolent opposition only undermine Bahrain's cohesion and security, as well as the region's stability. These actions are inconsistent with U.S. interests and strain our partnership with Bahrain. They also contradict the government's stated commitments to protecting human rights and achieving reconciliation with all of Bahrain's communities, said Secretary of State Kerry, while also regretting the missed opportunity of Al-Wefaq's boycott of November 2014 elections and acknowledging the real security threats that Bahrain faces. The United States calls on the government of Bahrain to reverse these and other recent measures, return urgently to the path of reconciliation, and work collectively to address the aspiration of all Bahrainis. This is the best way to marginalize those who support violence and bring greater security and stability to the region. For our part, the United States will continue to support steps by all sides to advance a political dialogue.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.